worked at Marconi, at Tropic Networks, and then in 2007 said, to heck with this large company environment, I've got a startup in me. And he went to a company that was a great idea, perhaps a bit ahead of its time, definitely was the first that I saw, of a company in overlay TV that allowed us to superimpose text and hotspots on videos, on YouTube and other places, something which has probably become quite commonplace since then, and a great idea. Rob was one of the co-founders and the CEO of that, and more recently he started something called MyMusic.com with a couple partners. And their website, I like this because I think it has real, for me, it said, these are people who are really crafting something they love. From the MyMusic site, the About reads, My Music was founded by three guys who love music but hate mindlessly scouring the web to unearth the best content available. We want all the great music content that we know is out there to come to us. We want it sifted, sorted, and filtered so that we get exactly only the stuff we are interested in. We also want a beautiful way to access all that content anytime we want, anywhere we are. We couldn't find anything that did that online, so we built My Music. That's probably a pretty good reason to build a service. So here tonight to talk to us about the life of a serial entrepreneur, what he has learned in the first two, the things he'd share with us in starting up a social business in this environment is Rob Lane.
Very much. So if you see me wandering around, you'll notice I've got the closer I get to that, the more interference there is. So I'll be stepping and moving around. So thanks very much, Joe. Tonight's not going to be a plug about My Music. I'm happy to plug My Music all night if you want me to do that. I'm happy to give you the pitch, whatever. We can do a full demo, that's fine. What I'm going to do is basically share my story, share what I've learned through going around this journey, this crazy ride that I'm on, and pass on some of the learnings. I'm going to talk you into starting a startup if you haven't tried one, and then I'm going to talk you out of it, and then I'm going to talk you into it again, and then I'm going to talk you out of it again. And depending on where we finish, you can decide for yourself. So before I get started, who personally knows me in the crowd? Kevin, good. I must keep the truth down to a minimum. Okay. So as I said, this is my journey. It's about what I've learned, and hence it comes with a health warning. Listen to it, take the experience, and follow it at your peril. It's relevant to me, obviously, because it's my journey, and I believe we've got some good experiences. But one thing I've learned is that advice is only relevant if the person that's given it stands in your shoes and knows exactly where you are. Otherwise, it's just opinion. And so, you know, please try and learn from it, but use it to your peril. So where did it start for me? Well, actually, it started a while ago. It actually started here. Sorry for the interference. Just try and put it over here. So it actually started, this is me, age 7, delivering newspapers. Not everybody's got a photo of them delivering newspapers at 7. And basically for me, I went from a 7-year-old boy from having one paper around to having 5 people delivering papers for me, which I found was much more efficient than actually delivering them yourself. You take a bit of a cut off the top. You could do several week rounds. You could do a weekend round. It was all very good. I then went on to work in a startup that actually probably I learned more about startups than anything else. And this was at a place called the Country Kitchen. The Country Kitchen, this is actually a store one. The Country Kitchen was a family business. My uncle actually owned the Country Kitchen. And basically what it was a small bakery that turned into a huge catering business. And I kind of think of it as my first real startup because I, with him, hand-delivered 2,500 flyers, aged 8, to launch the business, and I cleaned those windows. I was calculating last night. I actually cleaned those windows 582 times. scrub floors, came over from school, so the business ran from age eight to when I was when I went away to university at age 18. And I worked there every night. I came home from school. I saw what it was like for a family business, saw what it was like for a founder to work with family to try and understand how you motivate people to work at the same speed as you, and why aren't people doing this? Why don't they understand the vision of the business, and yada, yada, yada. And I thought one day this would be useful. I didn't exactly know where, but it was useful. One thing you'll notice as I'm going through this speech is the size of the squares actually represent how much entrepreneurial experience I got from it. So as I go forward, it all kind of worked. So at that point, 18, I went away to a school and got a formal education, because I was told that was important at some point. And I then went on and did what I affectionately called the corporate years. And worked for three companies, Taylor Hobson, a data mining company, Fujitsu, a big telecom company, and Marconi. Excuse me. So Marconi actually brought me over to this side of the pond. I was sat in a meeting one day, and it was the boom time in the late 90s, and someone said, hey, wouldn't it be great if we're in the US? And I kind of went, that's me. I'm good for that job. And everybody kind of paused and looked at me and said, are you sure that's what you want to do? And 24 hours later, I was commuting on a weekly basis back and forth to Pittsburgh, and 3 months later, I moved over to Dallas and basically founded that business within the shell of Marconi. Went from zero to some very big numbers in no space at all. In 2 years, we went from zero to $100 million, which of course was all my doing. it just happened to be in telecom at the right time, the boom time, and I just happened to be in the right time. So obviously the boom was all my fault. The actual collapse after was nothing to do with me. Because one day I actually took a phone call from a guy who said to me, hey, you've done this kind of startup thing once before. How about you actually do it for real? There's a company in Ottawa, and I was in Dallas at the time. There's a company in Ottawa looking for somebody to come and run be VP of sales marketing. And I kind of went, that's great, where's Ottawa? And long story short, moved what is now 11 years ago to join a company called Tropic Networks, which were a systems business selling into Comcast, Time Warner, telco, video on demand type systems. And I moved from Dallas in March, 80 degrees when I left Dallas, with a coat not thicker than this, minus 19 landed in Ottawa. Very interesting. And it's been wonderful to stay here since. So, joined Tropic, did that for 5 years, we sold it to Alcatel-Lucent. At that point, I said, okay, it's time for me to become a founder. Founder of Overlay. Overlay was all about interactive TV, did that for 4 years, 5 years almost. Got caught up in the financial downturn, shall we say, and lost board members, lost VCs, lost all sorts of things. And found myself in a situation about a year ago, where I actually met through Janice at the back of the room there, Steve Bleeker, as we call him. He likes to be called Steve and not Steve. He's very particular about that. So basically, we talked about this idea, Stephen and Janice. Well, actually, Janice had bought this URL called mymusic.com back in 1996, an amazing piece of real estate, and done a few things with it. But we'd been speaking about it for probably about 5 years. Wouldn't it be great to build this all-encompassing music site? And so that's what the journey we're on now. So as I said, I'm not gonna talk about music. It's about the learnings we've kind of been through. And so a bit of a crowd survey. How many in the crowd would consider themselves technical? Okay. How many design? None. How many business? How many something else? Okay. How many people have thought about starting a business? Wow, a good number. And how many people have actually started that business? Fantastic. So a lot of people have the idea about starting a business. Is this not working for us?
Hello.
Oh.
Thank you. Yeah. Fantastic. But I was having a bit of a problem there. And so what I...
That was the free version. We go premium now.
Yeah, exactly.
We upgrade.
So what I found is that in a lot of cases, the thing that stops people doing a business is it's not about having the right idea. People say, well, I didn't start a business because of the funding. I didn't know the right people. I didn't do that, this, that, and the other. I didn't do anything. In my experience, there's one thing. The predominant thing that stops people starting a business is this. What goes wrong? What happens if it goes wrong? Will everyone still love me? Can my friends still talk to me? Can I still go out? Can I still hold my head? I view it a bit like this. You've got to recognize that a very high percentage of startups are going to fail. The odds of success are so small that, you know, it's got to be it's a long shot. So I would encourage you to ask yourself the following question before you even think about this. Do you want to change the world? It's not for everybody. It is for some people. Do you want to change the world? If the answer is yes to that, you need to ask yourself the following question. Are you slightly insane? Because you've got to be slightly insane to actually start on this journey, to actually believe that you can change the world. Once you've established that you are slightly insane, you need to say, are you comfortable with your insanity? Because when it goes wrong, and it will on a daily basis, you need to be able to rationalize that in your own mind. And finally, if you're comfortable with your insanity, can you financially support your insanity? It's one thing having all these places, and you know, you read the startup media, you know, and it's always two guys that start with nothing in their basement, and before you know, they're Facebook. That's wonderful. I would encourage you not to read that, because for every one of those you read, there's thousands that have gone by the wayside. You learn a lot more by, you know, success hides a million kind of failures. So you learn a lot more by looking at people that have actually done wrong. And fortunately, I'm speaking tonight, so I can actually. This is not a job; it's a way of life. And by that, I hear people talk about, you know, I want to do this startup, but I'm not really sure. I don't really want to stop my job. For me, it's all about. It's never really been about a job. It was never a job when I started in that, you know, in the country kitchen back in whatever it was, the late 70s. It's a way of life. You've got to believe that this is something big and it's something real. And it's not a 9-to-5 job. And maybe this one won't work, but it's in you. You just can't do anything else, because you get the chance to create something amazing. And what else can you actually do? Obviously, unless you work for Stacey at United Way, what else can you actually do that can change the world and do something amazing? So, let's talk about founders. I'm going to go through now some of the elements of building a business and talk about what that is. Because what I found is one of the hardest things to do is align people's interests. And that starts with a founding group. Because the problem with that is everybody says, oh yeah, it's easy, we've got the same vision. But the challenge is you actually need to be brutally honest to get the shared vision. And brutal honesty doesn't come easy for a lot of people. Because, you know, some people, everybody's lives are different. And so aligning that vision is something that's really important. The reason it's important is if you look at one of the biggest breakups of startups, it's not because they didn't have the right product, it's not because they didn't have the right team. It's because one of the founders left the business and the founding team fell apart and hence the business fell apart. It's overridingly one of the biggest failures of companies that the founding team split up. And so kind of aligning that vision is something that you've got to make sure you're doing. If you want to know if we're doing it well, ask Steve, because I don't know, I think we're doing okay. And because we keep going around this loop and doing things differently, so hopefully this time it's better. Founders. So there are lots of good points about founders. You know, you complement each other's skill sets. You don't try and get people that are exactly the same as you. You motivate each other in those black hours, and there are lots of black hours. I view it as very much of a roller coaster. The dips and the troughs depend on, you know, what you're going through at the time. Some days the dips and troughs happen on about an hourly basis. You know, from we've got the best thing in the world to, oh my God, I'm insane, why am I doing this? Sometimes around weekly, but it's a roller coaster. So it motivates you to the darkest hours. And being a sounding board, it's great to have someone to bounce stuff off. Because, you know, ideas are wonderful, but, you know, you've got to have someone to kind of say, no, that's completely nuts. So there are good points with founders. There are also, you can expect, a few bad points. So generally, founders steal your equity in the business. What do I mean by that? Well, if you've got four founders, guess what? You only own 25% of that business on day one. You know, you might split it in some other way, but if there's four of you, you probably own 25%. So you've just taken a huge haircut on day one. They steal your equity. They may not share your vision for success. It may be that, you know, they want something completely different out of it. And again, that's why it comes down to you know, sharing what you actually want out of this. And the other thing is, and Steve Jobs always said this, is you end up having to justify yourself half the time to somebody else. I don't want to do that. I'm right. Why don't I convince somebody else? But you end up justifying yourself to others. But so building that founding team is so important. You know, I've done one thing I did differently this time is, you know, I've been through this startup round now 3 times. You don't always get to pick your founders. Sometimes you put together with them from VCs. This time we did get to pick our founders, and you know, it seems to be going well. At least we're talking to each other, Steve, at the moment. Yeah.
You're
awesome. Most of the time. Thank you. You're great too, buddy. So, key strengths for this team. You know, and again, for me, it's all about human strengths. Yes, you've got to have marketing skills. You've got to have business skills. You've got to have design skills. That stuff is viable and it's easy to do, relatively. The difficult things are flexibility in the team, humility to laugh when it goes wrong, and the ability to change rapidly. There's one thing I want you to take away. It's that the biggest thing you can build into your team, the biggest trait of the team, is to be able to change rapidly. Because the odds of you getting it right first time are zero. You may get that lucky moonshot. The odds are so small that it's not worth thinking about. So the ability to be flexible, the ability to basically slog your guts out for weeks on end, and then look at it and go, you know what? No. Tear it apart and start again. That takes intestinal fortitude. and you'll be surprised how many times that happens. To just look at it and because the trouble is you get into groupthink and you go around the team and you go, yeah, we're great. Press release, TechCrunch, did it, Worlds, you're great. And you look at it and go, actually, no, we're not. Shit, it's terrible. So let's do something different. So getting into that, you know, design something, measure, iterate. That's that rapid cycle, and that's what we're trying to do here. So key strengths, when we're recruiting, you know, we look at obviously you've got to have a functional skill set, whether that's design, marketing, coding, business, whatever it is for you, PR. But these are way more important. Okay, funding. So, funding's an interesting game. People say it's one of the biggest challenges around the business. I actually don't believe that at all. So to give you a bit of background, at Tropic, we raised $156 million. Wow. and spent only $160 million. you know, different business, systems business, and why did we raise that much? Well, we raised that much because someone was foolish enough to give it us. And at the time, our competitors were raising similar amounts, so why shouldn't we? Overlay, we raised $10 million over 2 rounds. And I would say, if I had to do Overlay now, and it's only 5 years ago, 6 years ago since starting that business. If I had to do Overlay now, I could probably do that same business for a quarter of the cost, just because costs of starting a business are going through the floor, especially a software business, especially a web-based business. Costs are so small. Just an example of that is, you know, when we were at Overlay, we had to buy, it was 2007, so you didn't have things like hosting from Amazon and Rackspace. We spent $250,000 on our own servers. which seemed like a great decision at the time, and now I can get that similar service for about $800 a month. So, you know, times are changing. The cost, and we'll talk about some of these tools as well going forward. So, what I say about funding? How much? Well, that's dead easy. Dead easy. You raise enough to prove the concept, and not a penny more. You know, now, if your business is in, you know, mining gold, obviously you need a little bit more to prove the concept than if you're doing a web-based startup and you can build some software and you can put it out and iterate. So there's no exact number. The point is you need to prove the concept out. Why do you need to do that? Well, you need to do that because it's always better to raise funding on facts rather than promise. That's not to say you can't raise money on funding, because trust me, I've raised lots on promises. I promise you the world is going to be wonderful. Give me your money. And if they believe you and if you're credible, people will invest in you. The challenge with that is they want a much bigger share of your company on day one. So promise, if you think promise, if you haven't proved it, you're going to be giving away more of your company. How much are you going to give away? You know, if you've got two VCs in your initial offer, you're giving away 40% of your business because they want 20% each. So think about it now. And this is not my music, this is just an analogy. Four people in your business, so you now own 25% of the 100%, and then you just get diluted by another 40%. So the day you get your first funding round, you're looking at about an ownership personally of about 15%. Hang on, you've not built anything yet. You've only put a team together and got some funding. So think about it in proving your concept. Enough to prove your concept. The way we did it at My Music this time was basically we self-funded the business for its first year, until, which comes with pain, but you know, our view is it's better to suffer the pain and prove some things and then go out and raise some money on the back of that than giving away the business on day one. So we've self-financed it for the first year. We then closed, once we launched our beta and got some stats on how the site was working, we then went out and raised $1 million. I'll tell you now, anyone that tells you that raising money is difficult, the only reason they say that is because they haven't proved anything. It's only difficult for people that have got a bad idea. There is a ton of money out there. There is a ton of money in this town looking to be invested. And so, the reason that it may be because you don't know those people, that's fine. But the fact is, if you've got an amazing idea and you've proved it, people invest in you. If people don't invest in you, it's because either the business doesn't prove itself or they don't believe in you, in which case you need to change. So, raise enough to prove the concept. Let's talk a little bit about product development, which is a very fun topic. So, product development has changed tremendously. Certainly, I'm going to talk about software now and the web. One of the third co-founder in My Music is from a games industry. And so there's a great analogy in the games industry that goes along the lines of this. The games industry, up until about 3 years ago, was very much like Hollywood. You raised a boatload of money. You designed in isolation, amazing design. It took about 3 to 4 years to get a big game out. And then you did a massive launch. You kind of prayed that it was going to be successful. And that was the games industry. And then along came this thing called Facebook, and along came this company called Zynga. Zynga weren't from the games industry. What they did, they basically said, okay, we will put out a game about farming, and we will design, and this is an analogy, it's not exactly, so humor me. We will produce blue tractors and red tractors. And we will look at what people do. We'll look at how many people use blue tractors and how many people use red tractors. And then we'll design, if more people use blue, we'll do more blue stuff. And if people use more red, we'll design more red stuff. They didn't get stuck in there, you know, 3 years of building this amazing thing, launching it, and then hope. Because you can't change at that point. What they did was build something, put it out there, look at what people do. Design, release, measure, iterate. Keep thinking about that. It's very important. There's no reason for you to spend hours away not talking to people. All the tools are all out there. There's massive to get a social presence, to get awareness, it's easy.